And so we're now returning to chapter 5. We're going to get back into the flow of Proudhon, quoting Proudhon for a minute. The second effect of property is despotism. And just to catch us up, because it's been a while, recall that Proudhon prefaced his explanation of the identity of property with robbery by saying that, quote, property violates equality by the rights of exclusion and increase, and violates freedom by despotism, the former effect of property having been sufficiently developed in the last three chapters, which we haven't read yet, because we jumped ahead to chapter 5. I will content myself here with establishing by a final comparison its perfect identity with robbery. Okay, so the second effect of property is despotism. Now, since despotism, and this is Proudhon speaking, is inseparably connected with the ideal of legitimate authority, in explaining the natural causes of the first, the principle of the second will appear. What is to be the form of government in the future? I hear some of my younger readers reply, "Why, how can you ask such a question? You are a Republican." And he replies, "A Republican? Yes, but that word signifies nothing. Res publica, that is the public thing. Now, whoever is interested in public affairs, no matter under what form of government, may call himself a Republican. Even kings are Republicans." "Okay, well, then you are a Democrat." "No." "What? You would have a monarchy?" "No." "A constitutionalist?" "God forbid." "You are then an aristocrat." "Not at all." "You want a mixed government?" "Still less." "What are you then?" And he replies, "I am an anarchist." And for you people, and for anyone who calls themselves an anarchist out there, pay attention, please. And for those who are paid by power to wear masks and hide and call yourself an anarchist, please start thinking for yourself independently. We need all hands on deck. And just because you have been trained up as an agent doesn't mean you have to remain so. Continuing with Proudhon, "Oh, I understand you. You speak satirically. This is a hit at the government." "By no means. I've just given you my serious and well-considered profession of faith, although a firm friend of order. And I am, in the full force of the term, an anarchist. Listen to me." He's quoting now. "In all species of sociable animals," he's quoting from Flourens' summary of the observations of F. Cuvier, "the weakness of the young is the principle of their obedience to the old, who are strong, and from habit, which is a kind of conscience with them, the power remains with the oldest, although he finally becomes the weakest. Whenever the society is under the control of a chief, this chief is almost always the oldest of the troop. I say almost always, because the established order may be disturbed by violent outbreaks. Then the authority passes to another, and having been reestablished by force, it is again maintained by habit. Wild horses go in herds. They have a chief who marches at their head, whom they confidently follow, and who gives the signal for flight or battle. The sheep, which we have raised, follows us, but it follows in company with the flock in the midst of which it was born. It regards man as the chief of the flock. Man is regarded by domestic animals as a member of its society. All that he has to do is to get himself accepted by them as an associate. He soon becomes their chief in consequence of his superior intelligence. He does not then change the natural condition of these animals, as Buffon has said. On the contrary, he uses this natural condition to his own advantage. In other words, he finds sociable animals and renders them domestic by becoming their associate and chief. Thus, the domesticity of animals is only a special condition, a simple modification, a definitive consequence of their sociability. All domestic animals are by nature sociable animals. I found that very interesting. I'm glad Proudhon shared it with us. Continuing with Proudhon, sociable animals follow their chief by instinct, but take notice of the fact, which F. Cuvier omitted to state, that the function of the chief is altogether one of intelligence. The chief does not teach the others to associate, to unite under his lead, to reproduce their kind, to take to flight, or to defend themselves. Concerning each of these particulars, his subordinates are as well informed as he. But it is the chief who, by his accumulated experience, provides against accidents. He it is whose private intelligence supplements, in difficult situations, the general instinct. He it is who deliberates, decides, and leads. He it is, in short, whose enlightened prudence regulates the public routine for the greatest good of all. Man, naturally a sociable being, naturally follows a chief. And I comment, this seems to be a variant of the earlier point made, quoting Cuvier, that the weakness of the young is the principle of their obedience to the old. And our Alice shows that this moment of natural obedience gets arrested and extended ad infinitum when the element of coercion is imposed on the infant, resulting in our present dilemma of our world now being run by such tortured, rampaging infants.